The secret of happiness is freedom, and the secret of freedom is a brave heart.
In 1791, when Tom Paine wrote a book titled The Rights of Man, the history of the United States has included the names of many who were crusaders for freedom, who fought for freedom, who died for freedom. This is a salute to a chosen few. Chapter 13, Freedom of Labor. Lawrence Dobkin portrays Samuel Gompers in Count Out for a Champ.
Mr. Shelton, welcome to the morgue.
Hi, Eddie. Did you check out that file on Sam Gompers?
Yeah, I got it right here. You're doing another story on Gompers, Mr. Shelton?
I guess you'd call it the end of one. I'm putting together his obituary.
Gee, I didn't know he died.
Now, he's not dead yet, but we just got an AP wire that he collapsed at a hotel in San Antonio coming back from the Pan American Labor Conference in Mexico. He can't last long in his condition at 74.
You've written a lot about him, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been covering Sam and the AFL ever since they came to Washington in 1897.
What's he really like, Mr. Shelton? Mr. Gompers, I mean.
Sam said once, "My legs are so short, I never can run away from a fight." And that about describes him. A bantam cock, a David knocking off Goliath. But he's made this world a better place to live in. Sam Gompers had to go to work when he was only 13 years old, making cigars. He put in as much as 100 hours a week in filthy slum tenement factories that had no ventilation and often no toilet facilities, and if he was lucky, he earned $4 a week.
I guess I see what you mean.
Sam wasn't much older before he decided that the only way to lick the sweatshops and put an end to the miserable working conditions and starvation wages was for the local unions to organize into a big one. He worked hard to get the message across, and he talked himself hoarse at meetings.
It's of very great importance to the working people that they have a fair share of the products of their skill, of their brain and muscle. That the necessities and comforts of life be within their reach. That they not be herded like brutes in poisonous tenements. That their children be spared the slavery of the coal bunkers and factory and be permitted to acquire an education. And that their feelings of human dignity are not outraged by arbitrary
regulation. He put in a lot of rough years without pay and without much success. He was blacklisted in the trade, and there were times that he didn't have shoes to wear and his family didn't have enough to eat. But that didn't stop him.
Fellow members of the International Union of Cigar Makers, fellow members, the meeting's been called to tell you how the shop owners have answered our strike against their inhuman wage reductions. They've gotten an order from Judge Friedman, which forbids us to picket the factories or even in any of the streets nearby, and also forbids the union to give any financial help to the strikers. Now, if we obey the court, we'll starve ourselves into submission and lose the strike. We will no longer be able to call our souls our own. That is my answer also. Even at the risk of going to jail, it's necessary to resist this court-made law. Men long ago, men whose memories are revered in this country, preferred death to slavery. And liberty is an empty word when men cannot associate for the purpose of lawful redress of grievances and to secure a betterment of their condition through relief from the burdens that wear them down. As an officer of this union, I intend to violate that court order by picketing and by giving the strikers all I have in my pocket, and I'll face the music for it.
What happened, Mr. Shelton?
Nothing that time. The New York Supreme Court decided the law was on the strikers' side and reversed the order. But not all courts saw it that way. On the record, most of them were anti-labor in the early days, and they found a way to tie the unions into knots.
How?
By what came to be called the labor injunction. used as a legal restraint on strikes and other union activities. Gompers has spent the last 25 years of his life trying to beat it.
But what about the strikes that turn into violence and those shootings and bombings? I noticed in some of the clippings they call Mr. Gompers a radical, even an anarchist like the ones he defended.
Oh, sure, Sam went to bat for those he thought were innocent or being railroaded. But the truth is that ever since the American Federation of Labor was organized in 1886, he's fought to keep the radicals out of it and to keep the Federation out of any kind of party politics. No man's done more to help free the labor movement from class hatred in this country. Say, Eddie, how about getting us some coffee?
Sure, I'll run over to Pete's wagon.
Here's a quarter. Cash.
I'll be right back.
And let's see. Where was I before I got up on that soapbox? Here we are. Buck's Stove and Range Company strike. Under Gomper's hard-driving leadership, trade union membership in the AFL grew to more than 1.5 million by 1904, but the organized opposition of industrial management grew with it. This opposition was focused on a union in St. Louis, Missouri, and a prolonged litigation that was to become a cause célèbre.
Well, Sam, it looks like the manufacturers and the Anti-Boycott Association are going all the way with this one to break up the unions.
Yeah, it won't be the first time it's been tried and won't be the last, Frank. The Polishers Union at Buck's Stove and Range had a legitimate reason to strike when the company abolished the 9-hour day.
And that's only part of it. They put spies in the shop, tried to provoke the workers into doing something to give them an excuse for canceling existing contracts. And they won't even talk with any of the union's representatives.
Yeah. The white knights of unbridled competition and unregulated free enterprise. Well, we've run up against these hard heads before, and the American Federation of Labor hasn't fallen apart. No reason it should now.
But the company won't consider any adjustment of the dispute. And the local union has declared a boycott of its products. Now, what do you think we better do about it here in Washington?
Well, we should endorse the boycott and give the local our full support, of course. You're the secretary. Call a meeting of the AFL Council. And I recommend that we publish the name of the Bucks Company in the We Don't Patronize list in the American Federationist magazine.
Well, if we do that, we better batten down the hatches, Sam. Because we're in for a storm.
Well, let it come, Frank. Let it come.
That was the start of a long and bitter war in the courts, bringing the issues between organized labor and organized management into a head-on confrontation. In response to AFL support of the striking union, the Bucks Company applied to the Supreme Court of the District of Columbia for an injunction to prohibit the carrying on of what it called a conspiracy to boycott the company. Sam Gompers and the AFL had been looking for a case to make a clear test of the fundamental questions involved, and they decided that this one was it. They would meet it by challenging the very right of the courts to issue injunctions, and Gompers was authorized to represent all the defendants before the court. He appeared on August 27, 1907, to reply to the bill of complaint.
You have heard the charges set forth in the petition for an injunctive writ, Mr. Gompers. Do I understand that you wish to reply to them personally?
I do, Your Honor.
Very well. You may proceed.
It has been claimed that the local unions and the Federation have engaged in a conspiracy for an illegal boycott of the Buck Stove and Range Company. I deny that. Well, while it is true that some phases of boycott have been considered a crime in the past, that was under common law. Even an agreement to strike for higher wages was a crime in the early days of our government under the common law. But such law was vague, obscure, and, as interpreted in less enlightened times, tyrannical. The common law as to strikes has been abandoned, and it will have to be abandoned as to the boycott.
Are you presuming to instruct the court in the law, Mr. Gompers?
I'm trying to make a point, Your Honor.
Then stop lecturing and make it.
Yes, Your Honor. A company's business is neither property nor a property right. Therefore, the unions can stop any citizen from trading with a given firm, providing the means used is not illegal.
I must ask you to be specific with regards to the complaint, sir.
Specifically, then,
I deny there is any conspiracy to boycott or to injure the Buck Stove Company business or to restrain the sale of its products. Or that the publication of the company's name on a We Don't Patronize list has prohibited any union or its members from dealing with anyone handling its products. Furthermore, if there is to be any limitation or regulation of the right to boycott, then I submit that is a legislative, not a judicial function. Accordingly, I ask that this case be dismissed.
Here's your coffee, Mr. Sheldon. Yours is Boston, like you said.
Thank you, Eddie.
How's the obituary coming?
Got Sam in the biggest fight of his life. Oh, that coffee is hot. Almost as hot as Sam was, I guess, after the court had slapped on that injunction.
Which one was that?
The Buck Stove Company strike and boycott. I remember going over to the AFL office. It was in the typographical temple on G Street then for an interview about the injunction. Sam had just got the word from his attorneys, and he was hopping.
These prejudiced judges are trying to revive antiquated and revolting doctrines implying that men are subordinate to masters. They're bringing back distinctions and inequalities that have no place in modern industrial relations.
Can I quote you on that, Mr.
Right?
Gompers?
Down to the last syllable.
Take it easy, Sam. You know what the lawyers say.
Oh, lawyers. The injunction is a legal trap that substitutes judge-made laws for statute laws, even for constitutional rights. When workers ignore it, they're arrested, brought before the court, and charged not with committing any crime, but with violating the injunction. They're not confronted by anyone who alleges a crime has been committed. There is no jury to hear or determine their guilt or innocence. And they are tried and sentenced by the judge who issued the injunction in the first place. I tell you, the courts are turning the criminal system into a personal and arbitrary process that denies the constitutional safeguards of a fair trial.
As one of the other officers of the AFL named in the injunction, what do you think about it, Mr. Morrison?
I still think we better take it easy.
Well, Jim Shelton's a fair and honest newspaper man, and I think you're wrong, Frank. The people have got to hear our side. They've got to know why we're going to fight this right down to the wire. Come in.
What is it, Rosa?
The printers downstairs sent up this galley proof on the text of the injunction that's being published in the Washington Law Reporter. I thought you'd want to see it.
Good. We'll borrow the same type and run it in the next issue of the Federationist.
Right.
We'll have to rush the January issue to get the Bucks Company on the We Don't Patronize list before that injunction goes into effect.
Copies all ready, except for your lead editorial.
Always one step ahead of me, aren't you? All right, I'll write it this afternoon.
Don't forget to take your pill before
yes,
lunch.
Yes, yes. Don't know what I'd do without that, Rosa.
What are you going to do about the injunction, Mr. Gompers? Will you observe it?
As you know, Jim, the order is temporary, and we will, of course, argue for dismissal. Meantime, let me put it this way. When any court undertakes without warrant of law to deprive me of my constitutional liberties, I will not hesitate to assert and exercise those rights.
He sure didn't give up easily, did he?
Oh, that was only the beginning, Eddie. The Bucks case was in the courts off and on for 7 years running.
How did it come out?
Well, on March 23rd, 1908, the injunction was made permanent and appealed. 4 months later, the Bucks Company petitioned the District Supreme Court to hold Gompers and two other offices of the Federation in contempt for violating it. At the hearing, the company was represented by Daniel Davenport, attorney for the Anti-Boycott Association, which was supporting the Bucks Company in their action, and he was really gunning for it.
You may proceed with your questioning of the witness, Mr. Davenport.
Mr. Gompers, you are president of the American Federation of Labor?
I have held that position, except for one term of office in 1895, ever since its founding.
In a sense, then, you might say that you are also the founder of the American Union movement.
I'm only one of the officers of the AFL, and we did not create the American Trade Union. Well, that is a product of forces and conditions. But we did create the technique and formulate the principles that guide trade unions to constructive policies and achievements.
Is engaging in a conspiracy to boycott a company in order to achieve your ends what you call a constructive policy?
You call it that. I don't.
Isn't it a fact that you and your organization are on record on numerous occasions as having violated or having urged your constituent unions to violate the terms of a lawful court order?
Objection!
I will have to sustain that, Mr. Davenport.
I show you this copy of a periodical called The American Federationist. It is published by the American Federation of Labor, and you are the editor of it, are you not?
That's one of my duties.
And in this January issue of this year, did you not write these words in an editorial as follows? With all due respect to the court, it is impossible for us to see how we can comply with all the terms of this injunction.
Yes, I did.
Did you not also write in this editorial that there was no court decision or law compelling people to buy Buck stoves, but that, and I quote, in any event, I am not going to buy them, and I take it for granted that you and our friends will act likewise?
Yes, I did. However, that January issue of the Federationist was distributed before the effective date of the injunction. Furthermore, I also said in my editorial words to the effect, which you did not choose to read, that a great principle is at stake, that the fundamental constitutional rights of free speech and free press...
Your Honor, I must protest the witnesses making a mockery of this hearing.
Mr. Gompers, I warn you that I will not tolerate any further digressions on your part.
And now, sir, in this February issue of the same periodical, which appeared after the effective date of the injunction, did you not also assert in print that the Bucks Company would continue to be regarded as unfair to union labor, whether or not its name appeared on the We Don't Patronize list?
I did, but that was an editorial opinion, not an official notice.
Was this particular issue distributed in the District of Columbia? Were the terms of the injunction specifically applied as to you and other officers of the AFL?
I don't recall.
I wish you would search your conscience on this, Mr. Gompers.
My dear brother, I would say, in reference to my conscience, I think it'll bear as close scrutiny as yours.
That is immaterial.
So is your question.
Mr. Gompers, I warned you.
Well, Your Honor, I think I have a right to protest the language this attorney...
I just don't want to have you lumber up this record with a lot of irrelevant matter.
Want to do it all yourself, do you?
Bailiff, clear this court at once.
What were the consequences in the Bucks case?
Sam appeared in court with Frank Morrison and John Mitchell, the two other defendants of the AFL, on December 23rd, 1908. I was there to hear the decision on the contempt charge, and I'll never forget it. The judge had three chairs placed side by side directly facing him, and he ordered the defendants to sit in them. And then he started in, and he upheld all the company's contentions one by one. He said the union had forced its members to support the boycott and that it had continued the conspiracy in defiance of...
Furthermore, the actions of the said defendants involve questions vital to the preservation of social order. Questions which smite the foundations of civil government. In this regard, even if the injunction was wrong or an error, it should have been obeyed. In this regard, those who would unlaw the land are nothing more nor less than public enemies. I hereby hold you in contempt of this court and of the government of the United States. Do any of the defendants have anything to say before I pass sentence?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, I say that this is a struggle of the working people of our country. A struggle to throw off some of the burdens heaped upon them, to abolish some of the wrongs which they've borne too long, to secure some of the rights that have been too long denied. If men must suffer because they dare to speak for the masses of our country, then they must. But in the pursuit of honest convictions, conscious of having violated no law, and in furtherance of the common interest of my fellow men, I submit to whatever sentence Your Honor may impose.
Then the judge threw the book at them. Morrison got 6 months in jail, Mitchell 9, and Gompers 12. The sentences were unprecedented in the law, especially as to the time imposed. Of course, there was another appeal, and all three were released on bail.
Well, how was it settled? Did they have to serve out the sentences?
The appeals court split three ways and voided part of the injunction, but upheld the conspiracy and contempt charges, so the case went on to the United States Supreme Court. Actually, the anti-union forces lost more than they gained. Gompers' conviction solidified his leadership of the labor movement, and the unions grew stronger than ever. At the annual convention of the AFL shortly afterward, Sam...
Judges sometimes usurp power and become tyrants. Disobedience to tyrants is obedience to law. Now, some of our friends, even our attorneys, have urged us to request that the United States Supreme Court dismiss this case. Well, we've refused to do so. Better men than we have gone to jail. If they must have their pound of flesh, they may have it. But they won't find any yellow streaks in it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Sam Gompers be re-elected president of the American Federation of Labor by the unanimous vote of this convention.
Well, Sam, since the Bucks Company has got a new president and he's worked out an agreement settling the strike with the St. Louis local, don't you think we should take our attorney's advice, ask for a dismissal of our appeal?
Oh, if we did that, Frank, we'd be selling the whole labor movement down the river and the country as well.
Why?
Well, the case doesn't involve just a dispute with a single union or the AFL. It covers the much broader question of whether the traditions and the guarantees of American liberties are going to be destroyed.
But I don't see...
Yet, Frank, what you don't see is that the injunction is going to continue to be used to nail labor to the cross until the issues involved are settled once and for all. If anything we wrote or said in the Bucks case was unlawful or damaging, the only legal punishment has to come from a suit for damages and a trial by jury where the facts and the truth can be determined. That's the only process authorized by the Constitution of the United States.
Mr. Shelton called from the paper. He said the Supreme Court just ruled that the validity of the injunction in the Bucks case had become moot, and so they've dismissed it.
Yeah. Moot. Anyhow, it's over with.
No, I don't think so. Mr. Shelton said the judge who sentenced you is going to reinstitute proceedings for contempt.
Well, good for him. I'd rather go to jail for a year than be freed on a technicality.
For crying out loud, do we have to go through all that again?
Was the Bucks case ever settled, Mr. Shelton?
Sam and the others were convicted of contempt a second time, and again they appealed, and again it went to the Supreme Court. But this time on a petition by the judge, who objected to a reduction of their sentences by the appeal court.
Sounds kind of like Alice in Wonderland.
It put Alice in the shade. But finally, on the grounds that contempt charges were criminal offenses, and since they were more than 3 years old, the Supreme Court reversed the original judgment under the statute of limitations. But Sam was still determined to do something about it, and when I saw him later, he told me,
"The principles of justice have been lost in a maze of legalisms. And since reform of the abuses of the injunctive system can't be secured by a legal decision, the workers will have to rely on other methods. We'll have to get reform through legislation."
The next time I saw him, they were dedicating the new AFL headquarters building on Massachusetts Avenue. Labor was getting more respect by then, and there were dignitaries from all over the country on hand for the ceremony. Well, Sam, you and the trade unions have come a long way in the last 20 years.
Yeah, more ways than one, Jim.
I see where the President of the United States will be here to speak.
Mr. Wilson's a wise and fair-minded man. He's agreed to the labor provisions of the Clayton Antitrust Act, and that'll be our Magna Carta. Finally spell out the fact that a man's labor is not a commodity or an article of commerce.
Mr. Gompers, the president's arriving. You better hurry up to the platform.
Coming, Rosa. Wouldn't do for one president to keep another waiting, Jim?
Mr.
Morgue Files, Eddie Greer speaking. Yes, Mr. Shelton's here. Oh. All right, I'll tell him. The telegraph desk just had a flash. Mr. Gompers is dead.
Now, little man with the big punch has finally been counted out.
I bet he has a terrific funeral.
The real tribute to Sam Gompers is already in the record, Eddie. The 8-hour working day, the laws to end child labor, workman's safety and compensation for injuries, all the things he's put on the books to make the American way of life a better way of living.
Morgue, Eddie Greer. It's a follow-up from AP, Mr. Shelton.
Let me hear it. Read it out.
Go ahead. Gompers died at 2 a.m., December 13th, 1924. His last words were, "Nurse, this is the end. God bless our American institutions. May they grow better day by day." Okay, thanks.
Well, Eddie, there's my lead. Run the rest of the obit up to copy. Tell him this will follow.
Yes, sir.
A story like this never comes to an end. You can't win human rights once and for all. They have to be won over and over again. You've been listening to Crusaders for Freedom, true stories of those who fought for what they believed. Today's episode was written by Dick Kipper and starred Lawrence Dobkin as Samuel Gompers. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Bannon, Bill Zuckert, Bill Irwin, Lillian Bioff, and John Reagan. Sound by Gene Twombly. The program was produced and directed by William Lally. This series was based on the book Crusaders for Freedom, written by Henry Steele Commager and published by Doubleday and Company. Terry O'Sullivan speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.